And after an inexplicable 7-year absence, we are back with another episode of the Cultured or Canon podcast. My name is Zach, your host. Our co-host this evening will be...
Nick, it's me again.
Nick, this is like a 5 for 5 so far.
I know, your ratings must be going down and down and down.
I know, and this is probably going to be our least listened to podcast ever because we're podcasting on Inception and this is going to be full of spoilers. So if you have not seen this movie, I would highly recommend not listening to this podcast until you've seen the movie.
I don't know, given the box office revenue so far, probably half of America's already seen it anyway, so...
Well, that's very true, But this is a movie that I just saw for the first time last night, Sunday, July 24th, or Saturday, July 24th, rather, today is Sunday. And, Nick, you were a bit surprised to hear that I didn't get to see it on opening weekend.
Yeah, I saw it actually a week ago, and I was surprised that I had seen it before you, because I know you were hotly anticipating this movie.
Well, here is the deal with that. It actually wasn't playing in my hometown theater, so...
Really? That's...
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, my hometown theater is only a 2-screen theater. It's a Majestic, like the Jim Carrey movie. Yeah, it's an old-school theater. I do live in a small town, you know, obviously, with about 12,000 people. Where I work, however, is I work, you know, in suburban Chicago, which is very big, but I live in a very small town. And I just didn't feel like driving to see them, just to see it. I mean, I was with my girlfriend. We didn't really feel like driving anywhere. We just felt like an evening in. So we said, well, the next time we go out somewhere, the next time we go out of town, we'll go see it. So this weekend, we went away for a long weekend. And on the way back, we stopped at an AMC 30, and we saw Inception. So
all right.
That's the story behind that.
That's a great story.
And well told. Well told.
It'll be Christopher Nolan's next film.
Only if I get to be played by Christian Bale.
But you don't grumble your way through a movie.
We are going to talk about Inception, which, as of right now, the way that IMDb works, this movie is ranked number 3 on their list of top 250 movies, which is pretty ridiculous. And it is a good movie, but I mean, you know, you understand. And like from a historical perspective, it's not the number 3 movie ever. I think we can all agree on that. It is a Christopher Nolan movie. It's very much a heist film, but it's a heist film that takes place in the dream world, which is very cool. Very, very interesting idea. Very ambitious film. And I have to say, very, very well done. Very professional job. I think that everybody involved in this film did a very good job.
I agree. I enjoyed it. I don't think it is the masterpiece people are on the internet are making it out to be. But I'm sure we'll get into that a little bit later.
I agree with you. And you had this feeling with The Dark Knight as well. You had this feeling that you like The Dark Knight, but The Dark Knight is not The Godfather Part 2.
Well, I think I enjoyed Inception more the first time through than I did The Dark Knight the first time through. So I'll throw Inception a few more points that I didn't give TDK. So.
And I would agree with you on that. I enjoyed Inception a lot more the first time in my viewing as well. Thank you, Emma. My sister just dropped off my medicine and my 7-Up. I should say that I have some kind of stomach bug right now, and it's been terrible. Anyway, I enjoyed it the first time through a lot more than The Dark Knight as well. I don't know. It's something about it I think is rather gripping, rather mystifying. I've always been interested in the dream world. I like to analyze and interpret dreams. I do have a clinical counseling degree, so I can say that I am somewhat qualified to do that in some ways. So it's always been a very very interesting part of the psyche, the dream world. I'm always having terrifying nightmares and horrible bad dreams. Just even last night, I just had horrible nightmares and bad dreams. So I'm always interested in dream worlds. I don't particularly think that they work well in movies, in television. For example, I absolutely hate dream sequences normally in movies because they're so out there, and it's really hard to kind of translate a dream to film. But I think that the way that the dreams work within the confines of Inception, that all right, it's maybe a little bit surreal, but like you know, it's not like you're not watching like a French foreign film or something. the dreams are very realistic in it, and I like that. And there's a reason for that, because there's an architect building the dream world. But I like that Nolan goes with that rather than the whole this is the fantastic dream world where anything can happen.
You know, like you, I'm currently on an educational path to be a clinical counselor as well, and so dreams, we've been looking at them. I know it's a conceit, but I love how in this movie everything that is scientifically known about dreams, this movie gets wrong. Such as in the movie they treat dreams as like a virtual reality, just plug in and you walk around and that's that, when that is not the case at all. But it's a conceit of the movie, you just kind of have to go with it.
It's a film.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like it's a big thing where they dwell on it overly much, with the exception of the rules, but we'll get into that later.
Well,
but
it is very much a science fiction film.
Yeah, well. Yeah. Like I said, it's a conceit, and it's one of those things you just have to go with it. Like, for example, in the Superman movie, Superman can fly around. How is that possible? It shouldn't be, but you just accept it and you go.
Exactly. And in the Batman movies, in the Nolanverse, Batman's got these ridiculously high-tech gadgets, which nobody would have. They would be way too expensive, and the technology is just not there yet. Like the sonar thing at the end of the film, and so forth. It's a conceit of the film. You have to suspend your disbelief. And Nick, you and I are very much capable of suspending that type of disbelief in movies, which is I think why you and I enjoy things sometimes on a higher level than somebody else. I don't know. Maybe it's our comic book background, but. So this is a film directed by Christopher Nolan, perhaps my favorite of the modern directors. I think that he works very well. He's got a very interesting visual style. His films, even the lower budget films that he started off his career with, have always looked particularly good to me. I think he's a solid script writer. I don't think that he's the best script writer that's out there, but I think that his scripts are usually very solid, and I think that he directs well. And I think that with each film that comes out, he's getting a better... He's adapting to a more action-focused film. You could argue that the action scenes in Batman Begins weren't that great, and then they got a little bit better in The Dark Knight, and I think that they got a little bit better here as well. He's an evolving director. He's not one to just sit around on his laurels and just do the same thing over and over again. He's upping the stakes with every film that he puts out, and I really enjoy that about him. Like, you know, take that in comparison with somebody like Judd Apatow. And I like Judd Apatow movies, and I know, Nick, you have mixed feelings on some of them, but all of his movies are exactly the same thing. There's a schlubby slacker guy who you know, learns a life lesson and matures by the end of the film, and that's it. You know, that the three films that Apatow has put out, that's the main premise to each of his films. You can't say that with Nolan. Nolan's a very visionary, very gifted director, with a good sense of story, and he's getting that sense on action. You know, he started out making films that were more drama based, and as his films become more and more summer blockbusters, it's great. It's fine with me because he's a very smart director. Just an example of how smart a director he is. He doesn't bother telling you, like, on the screen. Let's say they're in a city. Let's say Inception, for example. There's a part of Inception where all of a sudden they're in an Asian city. Now, if you're a smart person, you know that that's Tokyo, because you'll see Tokyo Tower. But he doesn't put Tokyo 5,000 miles from America on the screen. Or they go to Mombasa, you know, which is in Kenya, I believe. And it doesn't say, Mombasa, population so-and-so, in brackets, we are in Africa now, or something like that. He doesn't take his audience for granted. He's willing to be smart with the audience. And I really like that about him. Whereas somebody like a Michael Bay or somebody like that will always underestimate the intelligence of their audience. So that's just kind of why I like Chris Nolan. But a little about this film, as far as the plot goes, it stars Leonardo DiCaprio and Joseph Gordon-Levitt as these two dream thieves, I guess is the best way you could put it, right? I mean,
yeah, probably they have the technology to go into someone's mind and steal things that they know through their dreams, essentially.
Right. So they've been given, at the beginning of the film, they've been given this task to steal this information from the head of Ken Watanabe, who you might remember from The Last Samurai, as well as one of Nolan's films, Batman Begins. He plays a businessman by the name of Saito, who has some idea in his head that they need to get out of him. Well, they fail in this mission, and because they failed in this mission, they've compromised the I don't know if it's the security or whatever of this group called the Kobol Corporation. So now they're being chased by the Kobol Corporation. When they meet up with Saito again, and he offers them a counter deal, he says, if you can incept, if you can plant this idea into Cillian Murphy's head, he will basically, the Saito man is so rich that he will basically be able to let Leonardo DiCaprio go back to the United States, where he's been on the lam, and live a free life with his children and his dad, who's played by Michael Caine. So DiCaprio is very intrigued by this idea. All he wants to do is get home to his kids. He's lost his wife under various controversial means that aren't totally explained until maybe three-fourths or so into the movie. So they take the job. But it's very hard to plant an idea in somebody's head. You have to make it look like they come up with the idea themselves. And I think that Joseph Gordon-Levitt, when he's talking to Saito, he says to him, something about elephants. He says, don't think about elephants. And then he says, now you're thinking about elephants. And who gave you that idea? You didn't come up with the idea of that yourself. You got it from me, and you know right off the bat. Something like that. He uses some little comparison like that. So anyway, it's very hard to incept a dream or a thought into someone's dream. So that what they have to do is they have to create a dream world within a dream world within a dream world, and it gets very, very complicated. They have to do this. To do this, they have to assemble this team of very specialized professionals, played by Tom Hardy and Ellen Page and Dileep Rao, who you might remember from Drag Me to Hell as one of the mediums in that film. And it's very much a heist film. It's a variation on a heist genre. And it's very well done. The special effects are fantastic. I really like the zero-G stuff, for example, when Gordon-Levitt is fighting these agents in a hotel hallway in zero-G. It is very well filmed. The whole film looks great.
The film has, as you mentioned earlier, has a lot of action sequences. That's probably my favorite one, and I hope they kind of port that to any upcoming Spider-Man movie, because I think that would work extremely well. When I was seeing him crawl around like that, that's immediately what jumped in my head.
That jumped in my head as well. In fact, Nick, I made a list of films which I feel this movie either you could compare to or drew influence from, depending on when the film was released. So, for example, here is my list. These are films that, as I was watching Inception, Inception reminded me of these films in some ways. The Matrix and its sequels.
Mm-hmm.
I can definitely see some. You can draw some comparisons there. Pretty much all previous Nolan films, just because he uses that very similar Nolan style. And then in addition to that, Memento. You can definitely get flashes of Memento in this movie. With the main character having lost their wife and their quest to try and make peace over that somehow. The films of French director Jean-Pierre Jeunet. He made Amelie, as well as City of Lost Children, Delicatessen. Very, very surreal type films have a lot to do with dreaming. I would say you could even see some Blade Runner in this, with the dystopian cities, especially the cities that DiCaprio and his wife, who's played by Marion Cotillard, create within their mind when they are trapped for the 50 years or whatever in their dream world. Those dilapidated buildings that are falling apart, for example, they reminded me of Sebastian's apartment in Blade Runner.
Yeah.
I saw a little bit of Children of Men in this film as well, certain directorial flashes and certain visual styles. I did see a little bit of Vanilla Sky in this as well, and you know my feelings on Vanilla Sky. I don't like that movie at all. But the whole thing with Tom Cruise, is he in the dream world or is he not in the dream world? And then at the end with him jumping off of the building to get back to Penelope Cruz's character in that film. And then lastly, a movie which I just saw recently, which I'm sure had nothing to do with this movie at all, except that it's very thematically similar in a lot of ways, but that was Shutter Island. And I don't know if you've seen Shutter Island or not.
I haven't yet.
Okay, but the basic premise of that is that Leonardo DiCaprio is either a crazy man or a police officer or police detective or whatever, and he's trying to find out about what happened to his wife, and his wife was, you know, she was murdered. So I saw some parallels there. I'm not gonna anybody criticize me and say that Zach says Inception is copying Shutter Island. That's not the case at all. I just drew some parallels between those two films there. But that was the list that I came up with, and I just wrote this list up before we started the podcast. I was thinking about it last night on the ride home, and there were some more films that I had drawn some comparisons from as well that I can't remember off the top of my head. And Sandra, my girlfriend, she was like, it really reminded me a lot of, and she was just about to tell me the name of the film, and then she completely blanked, and she never came back to her.
You know, this movie reminded me a lot of Song of the South. No, not at all.
One of the things that I enjoyed about the film as well were the dynamics between the main characters. I really felt like this was a team that could have worked together, whereas in a lot of movies, you throw in the smart mouth or the black guy or the hot blonde or whatever, and it's like, why are these people friends? Why are they hanging out? But I really got the feeling like this team in here like really kind of depended on each other, especially Ellen Page. Ellen Page really, really slammed that point home for me when she's pleading with DiCaprio to let Gordon Levitt and everybody else know that he's going through these psychological problems with his subconscious. You know, she cares about these people. She doesn't want anything to happen to these people. And I thought that Nolan did a great job as far as the directing and the script go with that whole thing.
I'll agree with you on that one. I think all the characters, they're believable, even though like some of them have like a little antagonism towards each other. Cobra Commander and Shinzon of Remus kind of have a ongoing, like a friendly feud.
Back and forth banter.
Yeah, but it would, they all seem like they work, kind of click and work together. To just use another comparison, kind of like how, at least I feel, I don't know how you feel on this, at least in the first Ocean's 11 movie, all those heist members seem to like work well together, and it was believable along those lines. Obviously a very different type of heist movie, more of a comedy. It was a group that really worked together.
If there was a big problem that I had with this film, it was with totems. I never really understood what the point of the totem... Excuse me. Sorry, I thought I was going to puke for a second. I never really understood what the point of the totems were. It never really explained like why Ellen Page picked a chess piece as her totem, why Joseph Gordon-Levitt picked the die as his totem. And it's explained why DiCaprio has the top, but like nobody else even mentions totems or show it. Like we don't see one from Dai Leap Rao, for example. I don't think that we see one from Tom Hardy, or as you call them, the guy from Star Trek Nemesis. I don't think Saito has one, unless he showed one and I just didn't see it. But I feel like there are a lot of rules to the dream world, and many of these rules get explained a lot, which is another problem I have. I think there's too much exposition, and that's for a different part of the podcast. But not enough time is focused to explaining what exactly is the point of the totems.
I think, from what I understood from the movie, I guess if he spins it and if it keeps spinning, then, oh, I'm still dreaming. But if it falls down, oh, I'm not dreaming. But it didn't make much sense in my opinion either. Especially since, I understand why they had Leo's, because it connects with his wife, and then it connects to the screw you ending, which I'm sure we'll talk about later. But like when Ellen Page like made her totem, I thought like, oh, I bet that's going to come into play later on in the movie. But it's never mentioned or anything before. Like that scene was very, very worthless. But
yeah, it's kind of like Chekhov's totem. If they show it to you right there in about the middle of the film, it should come back to play later on in the film, but it never does.
Yeah, like seeing Cobra Commander. I won't call him that anymore.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
We saw his. Seeing his was just a way to explain to Ellen Page what the deal was, and that she needs to make her own.
Right.
So the fact that like so his totem, that was the role that it played, and we didn't need to see his again. But hers, I don't know. It's like there's I don't know. That scene could have been done the same. Did you make one? Yes. Cool. And that'd be it. If they needed that. I don't know. I'm babbling here, so.
And I gotta say, I do, another weakness that I had with the film, some of the cameos in it, like, I love Michael Caine. Don't get me wrong. I love him. I think he's great. But he's almost completely wasted in this movie.
Yeah, I was surprised to see that he had like only like two scenes, two small scenes at that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I would have expected him to be more in it. But
and Pete Postlethwaite as well, he who plays Cillian Murphy's dying father, he really has only two or three scenes as well. And I was just, I don't know, those two men are such respected actors. I guess I just kind of expected them to be in it a bit more. It was nice to see Tom Berenger getting work.
If I had any problems with the film, it was, this would be it. Like, all the characters in the film, with the exception of, like, Leonardo DiCaprio, seemed to be kind of, I don't know, cardboard cutouts. Like, I was watching this movie, and I didn't care about any of them, with, like, the exception of Leo, who has a bit of an emotional journey. But the rest of these guys are just kind of there. I don't know. Am I making sense?
You are, because, well, I did care about the characters. I liked them. I thought they were well done. Their motivations, however, could have been a bit more defined. There wasn't really all that much at stake. If they had failed in their inception, then Cillian Murphy wouldn't have broken up the businesses, which, according to Saito, would have been bad. But how do we know that would have been bad? It might not have meant boo. I mean, it was really about... I mean, for DiCaprio, it wasn't, but for everybody else, it was about the job, about the money.
Mm-hmm.
But for DiCaprio, it was more cathartic, you know, which I guess is interesting for DiCaprio, but not so interesting for the rest of the people that he's with. So, no, you're making sense.
And, I don't know, you said Nolan's one of the better or he's a good screenwriter.
I said he's a solid screenwriter.
Solid screenwriter, solid. Okay. See, I don't know if I fully agree with that. I liked his other works that he's written, but this one here, maybe it's just a case of too much exposition or over-exposition, that this film just has, I feel, a large number of plot holes that I can't believe that he missed. Like, for example, when they're all on the airplane, and supposedly Saito and Cillian Murphy are business rivals, and they're sitting down right next to each other.
How do they not know each other?
Or rather, how does Cillian Murphy not recognize him?
Yeah.
I mean, you'd think that would be, you know, a big, big thing. Or when Cillian Murphy wakes up and think, wow, that was a weird dream, and turns around and sees, hey, you were there, and you were there, and you were there. I don't know, it just seems...
A bit convenient, or...
Maybe not a bit convenient, or it just seems like, you know, I'm surprised that they wouldn't figure out some way around this or something, or acknowledge it, or I don't know. And also I had a big problem with the concept of the kicks, about how that was supposed to work, especially when they were in the limbo.
Because
they kept on saying, like, you can't, since they were sedated, they can't be killed in the dream world. That won't wake them up. But when they're in limbo, they kill, Ellen Page kills herself and then kills Murphy so they could go up to the next, I don't know, I'm confusing myself here. But,
yeah,
no,
you're right in that the rules are either really well defined, ambiguously defined, or not defined at all. And that is a weakness of the film. I think it's just, unfortunately, it's just one of those things that you just have to take, and you know, you just kind of have to take it at face value. The big problem that I have with the story is that I'm not sure it was even necessary to even have the third level of the dream at all.
Where the people wearing white.
Yeah, which reminded me very much of a James Bond film.
Yeah.
At the bunker.
Yeah, the GoldenEye level.
Yeah, it reminded me very much of James Bond. Also reminded me of Metal Gear Solid as well. In fact, I was talking to Sandra about this, and I mentioned this to her as well, and she's like, yeah, it really reminded me of a video game, too, that whole third scene. because there's a lot of action. There's like people running around shooting people and things like that. And I think I feel like it kind of gets away from itself a bit there, just a bit too much. And then the other big problem I had with the film is that DiCaprio is not able to get over Marion Cotillard or whatever. He feels really guilty about that, and that's fine or whatever. But I'm not so sure it was necessary to have her keep popping up into every single world that they created. In fact, it made it a little bit confusing at first, like in the beginning of the film, like the first half hour, when he and Lucas Haas, who is their architect at the beginning, and Joseph Gordon-Levitt are trying to break into Saito's mind at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Like she comes out of nowhere.
They kind of introduce her as like a rival spy. Just
right.
About.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. That's the problem that I had with it. Yeah. I'm glad you put it that way. That's a perfect way to put it. And I was like, oh, wait a minute, but like I thought that she was supposed to be his wife, but she's actually his rival. Is she dead? Is she alive? I don't know. It's all up in the air. So
what didn't make sense with that is when she pops up, Joseph Gordon-Levitt sees her as well and just kind of accepts it like, oh no, she's tricking us again.
Mm-hmm.
Versus like, huh, shouldn't you be dead? Or mm-hmm. like, it didn't make sense there at all.
Yeah, it didn't, it just didn't work for me. It just didn't.
And if she was a member of, like, if she was like a part of just his subconscious, why is she acting so independent when all the other subconscious people, like all the people who are like formed in the subconscious, like are kind of like automatrons, just like going about their daily business and don't have any real interaction with knowing it's a dream unless the person who's dreaming feels threatened.
Right. So in her case, it was kind of like she was like a rogue, like a loose cannon. I thought it would have been interesting, let's say, if she was actually trapped in the dream world, like her character, if it wasn't Leo's subconscious, so wherever he went, she was too, and that way she really would have been kind of like a rogue agent or whatever you want to call it. But it just ended up being kind of confusing, and it took a little while for me to understand that. And I mentioned earlier that I think that Nolan is a very smart director. But I don't think that was an intention. I don't think that it was his intention to confuse the audience with that. I just think that there wasn't enough explanation or the right kind of explanation at first. So, I don't know. Maybe that's my weakness of the film, but...
See, a lot of people online are talking about how deep this film is. And I really don't think it's all that deep. Here's going to be a controversial statement, so prepare yourself. This film... It has buckets and buckets of originality, which is fantastic, because you don't see a lot of truly original ideas get to play out. But this film, I think, is no more deeper than something like Avatar.
Right, and to be honest with you, in some ways, this did remind me of the new Star Trek film, in some ways. Like a whole lot of things happening quickly in some places. The team of people who is working well together and giving each other comedic banter and things like that. I did feel like in a lot of ways, if you would cut, let's say you'd cut out a lot of the psychological stuff, and you, let's say you cut this movie down to an hour and 45 minutes, I felt like this could have been like the first part in a 3-part like Dream Detective trilogy or something like that. I felt like it could have been a summer blockbuster tentpole, you know, but it happened to be. It happened to have the psychological layers on it and the Nolan touches. So yeah, I don't particularly think that it was a very deep movie as well. It's a very visually interesting movie, a movie with a couple of pretty great ideas, I gotta say. Did I like this movie? Yes, I liked it a lot. Did it live up to the hype that I had personally placed in it? I don't mean any media hype. I'm talking about my own hype. Yeah, I would say it lived up to it. I thought it was better than The Dark Knight. I think that Nolan is a pretty great director, and we can't expect, you know, I can no longer expect like perfectionism from the filmmakers. So this film did what it needed to do to please me. It is a very much fully realized world in a lot of ways, and I think that it's very neat. Now, we are not going to cult or can this film. That would be absolutely ridiculous to do that. it's not a cult film by any means. It's a very, very mainstream film. It's a Christopher Nolan film. The guy has directed the third highest grossing movie of all time in The Dark Knight, so it would be ridiculous for us to do that. But Nick, would you say this is a film that you could recommend to other people?
As I mentioned before, I don't think it's a very deep film, but I think it's an extraordinarily original film. I think it's very, very watchable. It sucks you in. Like, when you start thinking about the film, like, it starts to fall apart, like, once you start analyzing it. But when you're watching it, you're sucked in. You're glued. You want to know what happens next. So I would recommend it on that level. It's a very interesting, original flick.
And yeah, I would have to say that I completely agree with you on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, Nick, I think that's going to do it for our podcast today. We've gone on for about 50 minutes or so. Thanks for being a part of the show, Nick. Make sure to check us out at culturedorcanon.blogspot.com. You can fan us on Facebook as well. Email the show at culturedorcanon@gmail.com. My name is Zach. I'm your host, and our co-host today was...
Nick.
All right, Nick. Thanks a lot for doing the show.
No problem.
All right, bye-bye. Yeah, Ellen Page, she touched it.